Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Shutara Shatashi Shimada Savangre Shila Prabhupada Ki Granta Rashima Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanandi All Glories to the Assembled Devotees All Glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Om Aknana Tamirandasha Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Gitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vanshakal Puturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Revacha Patita Nambhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Ekantina yasya na kanchanartam Vanchanti ye vai bhagavat prapannah Atyad bhutam tachtaritam samangalam Gayanta ananda samudra magnah Hare Krishna yeah. Atyad bhutam chach charitam sumangalam Gayanta ananda samudra magnah Ekantino yasya na kanchanartam Vanshanti evai bhagavat prapannah Atyad bhutam tach charitam sumangalam Kayanta nanda sumangalam Mothers Kantana yasya kanchanartam There's a second verse also. Tamakshanam brahma paramparesham avyaktam adhyatmika yoga gamyam atindriyam sukshma ivaiti dhuram anantamadhyam paripurnam iti de. Word to word meaning, ekantina, unalloyed devotees, who have no desire other than Krishna consciousness. Yasya, the Lord of whom? Na, not Kanchana, some Artam, benediction, Vanchanti, desire. Yea, those devotees who Vai, indeed, Bhagavat Prapannaha, fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Ati Adbhutam, which are wonderful. Tat Charitam, the activities of the Lord. Sumangalam, and very auspicious to hear. Gayantaha, by chanting and hearing. Ananda, of transcendental bliss. Samudra, in the ocean. Magnaha, who are immersed. Should I do the second verse also? Word to word? Yeah. Tam, unto him. Akshanam, eternally existing. Brahma, the supreme. Param, transcendental. Paraisham, the Lord of the Supreme Personalities. Avyaktam, invisible, or not able to be realized by the mind and senses. Adhyatmika, transcendental. Yoga, by Bhakti Yoga, devotional service. Gamyam, obtainable. Ati Indriyam, beyond the perception of material senses. Sukshmam, minute. Eva, like. Ati Dhuram, very far away. Anantam, unlimited. Adhyam, the original cause of everything. Paripurnam, completely full. Idhe, I offer my obeisances. Translation, purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, unalloyed devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Lord, worship Him in full surrender, and always hear and chant about His activities, which are most wonderful and auspicious. Thus, they are always merged in an ocean of transcendental bliss. Such devotees never ask the Lord for any benediction. I, however, am in danger. Thus, I pray to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally existing, who is invisible, who is the Lord of all great personalities such as Brahma, and who is available only by transcendental bhakti yoga. Being extremely subtle, He is beyond the reach of my senses and transcendental to all external realization. He is unlimited, He is the original cause, and He is completely full in everything. I offer my obeisances unto Him. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karmadya navritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutama. Quote, one should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service, end quote. Unalloyed devotees have nothing to ask from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but Gajendra, the king of the elephants, was circumstantially asking for an immediate benediction because he had no other way to be rescued. Sometimes when there is no alternative, a pure devotee, being fully dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Lord, prays for some benediction. But in such a prayer, there is also regret. One who always hears and chants about the transcendental pastimes of the Lord is always situated on a platform on which he has nothing to ask in terms of material benefits. Unless one is a completely pure devotee, one cannot enjoy the transcendental bliss derived from chanting and dancing in the ecstasy of the Sankirtan movement. Such ecstasy is not possible for an ordinary devotee. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us how one can enjoy transcendental bliss simply by chanting, hearing, and dancing in ecstasy. This is Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, the king of the elephants, Gajendra, said, Adhyatmika Yoga Gamyam, indicating that unless one is situated on this transcendental platform, one cannot approach the Supreme Lord. The benediction of being able to approach the Lord can be achieved after many, many births, yet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has awarded this benediction to everyone, even to the fallen souls who have no heritage of anything in spiritual life. That is actually being seen in the Krishna consciousness movement. Therefore, the path of Bhakti Yoga is a spotless process by which to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktyahamekaya grahya. Only through devotional service can one approach the Supreme Lord. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 1, Maya sakta mana partha yogham yujam madhashayaha asangshayam samagham mang yata gnasisi tachranu. Quote, now hear, O son of Pritha, Arjuna, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt, end quote. Simply by being attached to Krishna consciousness and by thinking of the lotus feet of Krishna constantly, one can fully understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead without a doubt. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, I think starting a few verses ago and all the way to the end of Gajendra's prayers, he is now glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the course of glorifying the Supreme Lord, glorification of his devotees comes up because they are non-different from his Swarup. Swarup means Krishna's own form. So just as our Swarups in this material world are made of eyes and ears and noses and mouths and mustaches and the others, we often say stool coming out of the head and so on. This is our beautiful Swarup which we are attached to. So Krishna's Swarup is also made of his devotees. They're part of his own form. They're not different from his form. So when Krishna's Swarup manifests, his devotees manifest. In the same way, when you manifest yourself for the morning program or for the Bhagavatam class, then I see your eyes and your ears and your nose and your mustaches and sikas. So in the same way, when Krishna manifests himself, his devotees simultaneously manifest because they're part of his Swarup. They're aspects of his internal energy. So in the course of glorifying the Supreme Lord, glorification of his devotees necessarily comes up. So here in this particular verse, the first one that's on the board, Gajendra is glorifying the devotees. And this is a glorification of Krishna, actually, because you come to understand the nature of a worshipful one by looking at the worshipers. Just like you may come to understand the nature of a particular leader by looking at those who follow him. So by understanding the nature of Krishna's unalloyed devotees, you start to understand something about the nature of Krishna. You follow? So therefore, this glorification of his devotees are necessarily coming up. That's in this particular verse. So in glorifying the devotees, he first refers to them as ekantino. Ekantino, eka means one, and Prabhupada has translated it as unalloyed. So they are unalloyed. That means they are intent on devotion or love for Krishna. And their love is not alloyed with other desires, which leads to accepting other processes for achieving those desires. Just like you may have so many desires, so you accept various processes to fulfill those desires. You don't always think to go to Krishna. You have some desire, like suppose Sunday feast is there. So you have some desire to get the samosa. Some samosas there, some pizzas there, but it is not at the main prasadam stall. You have to buy it. So you have some desire to get the samosa, get the pizza. So you think of some method by which that can be obtained, isn't it? So if you are an honest person, you just get some money and you go and buy it. But when the samosa is being transferred from downstairs to upstairs, many times a big thing is there. So someone is carrying on their shoulder. So they cannot see if someone takes anything or not.
So then you may think of another process for obtaining that. And as they're walking by, they don't see, so you just go, oh, Haribo, Prabhu. You know, you kind of just grab on samosa. So when you have one, when you have a certain desire, it leads to accepting a certain process for fulfilling that desire. The process may be honest or may be dishonest. So the devotees are ekantina. They are unalloyed in their devotion, their love. They're intent only on love. They have no other desires, Prabhupada is saying. So being without other desires, they do not accept other processes. They accept only bhakti yoga. This is the meaning. And the very outside of the Bhagavatam's teachings on this, in the second chapter, you can see in the first canto, Ata pumbir dvija seshta varnashrama vibhagashaha swanushritasya dharmasya samsudya haritoshana. What is the purpose of dharma? What does dharma culminate in? Huh? Dharma culminates in sangsudya haritoshana, pleasing Krishna. So that means if you're doing dharma, and dharma here means varnashram dharma, you're acting according to your psychophysical situation in this world. The whole purpose of doing so is to please Krishna. So you can please Krishna simply by hearing, chanting, remembering him. So what is the need for dharma? This is the idea of this verse, actually. Atampu. What is the need for dharma as such? Because bhakti is its own dharma also. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what is that verse? Raja vidya, raja guhyam, pavitram idam uttamam, praktaksha avagamam, dharmyam, susukam kartamaya. So bhakti is also dharma. And the culmination of dharma is to please Krishna. So you can please Krishna just by singing his glories, remembering Krishna, hearing about Krishna. So what is the need for dharma separately? This is the idea of this verse. Also, someone question comes up, well, what about gyan and vairagya? How you do spiritual life if you don't have gyan? If you don't have vairagya? Gyan means spiritual knowledge, understanding the difference between matter and consciousness. Vairagya is the detachment from the world that follows such knowledge. If you do not have that, how you will practice spiritual life? So then the Bhagavatam is saying to that, Vasudeve Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, Janayati Ashu Vairagyam, Gyanam Chayara Ahetukam, that from this bhakti is coming Gyan and Vairagya spontaneously. So the idea of these verses in the outside of the Bhagavatam is too, that since dharma culminates in pleasing Krishna, which is bhakti, and since bhakti awards for fruit of Gyan and Vairagya, then you need only do bhakti. This is the idea of that section. So then the section concludes with saying, Tasmat ekana manasa, keep your mind fixed on Krishna only, who is the Satvatapati, the guardian of his devotees. How you will do that? How you will fix your mind on Krishna? What's the answer? Yeah, chanting Hare, Shotavya, Kirtitavyascha. And what is the rest of the verse? Smartavyas, Pujas, huh? Four things mentioned, hearing, chanting, remembering, and worshiping. Simple, then you keep your mind on Krishna this way. Tasma ekana manasa, exclusively. Ekana manasa, mind is fixed on this one point only. Intent only on devotion to Krishna, which is the fruit of dharma, which includes within it gyan and vairagya. No need to alloy your love with other processes. Love itself will give all these fruits automatically. So such devotees are called as ekantina. Ekantina means they're intent only on love of Krishna, exhibited in hearing, chanting, and so on. That is what it means to be devotee, fixed up. Ekantina manasa. So such devotees, it says here, yasya na kanchana artam vanchati. They have no desires for artha. You see the word kanchana artam. What is kanchana means other, right? Some, yeah, benediction. Some kanchana artam. The word artam means wealth. We normally hear it in this way, dharma artha kama moksha. The word artha means wealth. But the word artha also means meaning, like meaningful. What is meaningful or purposeful? Like Srimad Bhagavatam Arthanam, understanding the artha of Bhagavatam. That what is the artha, what is the meaning of Bhagavatam? Aswado rasikisaha, that you can understand the association of a devotee who is a connoisseur of the Bhagavatam. Aswado means to taste. Rasiki refers to a devotee. It means a connoisseur. Rasikisaha, he's a connoisseur. Just like, normally the word connoisseur refers to someone who's expert in tasting wine. And you can understand, he can take a little sip of wine and understand, this is from 1969, this is from 19. This is how the word actually connoisseur is normally used in the English language. But connoisseur of the Bhagavatam, if you want to understand the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam Arthanam, if you want to understand the artha of Bhagavatam, then that you have to go to a rasika, some connoisseur of the Bhagavatam. Saja Atiya, he should be like-minded with you. And Sneha, he should have affection for you. This is called perfect sadhu sangha. Then you'll get the meaning of Bhagavatam. So the word artha also means meaningful or purposeful. That which is having meaning in life, real meaning. So the devotees, yasya na kanchana artham, they have no vanchati. They desire nothing else, no other wealth. They find no other meaning except that the meaning that is informed by their love for Krishna. In other words, by love, bhakti yoga, then you can get out of maya. Otherwise, you cannot get out of maya. You cannot get out of maya by gyan, by ragya, and dharma. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, only by love, surrender to him, you can come out. What is that? Daivyesha, gunamayi, mamamaya, durataya, mameva yeprapadyante mayamitam tanantite. Isn't it? So only if you love Krishna, you can come out of this maya. If you don't love Krishna, you cannot come out of the maya. So what is the definition of maya in the Bhagavatam? This word artha comes there in the definition of maya also. In the Bhagavatam it says, rite artham, which is not meaningful, yapratiyeta, but it appears to be so. Na pratiyeta chatmani, and it also appears to not have any relationship to Krishna. This is maya. What is the definition of maya? That which appears to be meaningful, although it has no meaning, because it has no connection with Krishna. When you're seeing something meaningful without its relationship to Krishna, this is what it means to be maya. You're finding some artha in that, even though you don't see its relationship with Krishna. Just like, for example, you might see some pizza, and you find great meaning in that. Yesterday, pizza is there. There is great meaning in pizza, isn't it? And not because it is prasadam, but because it's pizza. You understand? So you're finding meaning in that. It appears to have meaning, but it has no relationship with Krishna, at least in your thinking about it. Everything has relationship to Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, mata sarvam pravartate. Krishna is the source of everything. So everything has this relationship to Krishna. Everything is integrated into Krishna because everything is Krishna's energy. So everything has relationship to Krishna. But when you look upon it, you do not find that artha in it. You see it has meaning in its own right and not because it has relationship with Krishna. So pizza has meaning because it is pizza and not because it is prasadam, isn't it? The cookies has meaning because it is cookie, huh? Not because it is prasadam. If you get some bitter melon, you say, no, thank you. Then someone would say, this is prasadam though. It's okay. I'm trying to watch what I eat, you know. I want to be sense control. Why you don't want the bitter melon? It is also prasadam. But then someone comes and offers cookie, you're very happy. Because you're looking at the bitter melon, not as prasadam, but as bitter melon, and you think, oh, I don't like bitter melon, so I don't want it. And you see the cookie as cookie, so oh, I like cookie. But you're not seeing it as prasadam. So you're finding meaning in something because you're seeing it as being meaningful in its own right and not having any relationship to Krishna. So this is the definition of maya. That when you're looking at the world and finding meaning in it in its own right and not because it has a relationship to Krishna. And then you're seeing a whole world of meaning like that. Actually, the world is meaningless without Krishna because it doesn't endure. Na sato vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sataha. That what is sat, what is asat, what is insubstantial does not endure. And what is real does not change. So that means something that is really meaningful can endure in all phases of time. This is the definition of truth or reality in the Bhagavad Gita even. And that which is not truth or not reality does not endure in all phases of time. So you're looking at an ephemeral world and you're projecting meaning into that which is ultimately meaningless because it does not endure. So if you see a world separate from Krishna and find meaning in it, then that is called maya. Then you're sucked up by maya. And then you will not get out. You will not get out. Because as long as you're finding meaning in the world, how you will get out of it? Just like you like certain TV shows growing up, even now you may like, but now you're trying to be a good devotee. But when you go and visit family, so no one is looking. So maybe some movie is there you like, so something you grew up on, some friends want to take you out to do something. And you still find some meaning in that. Why are you finding meaning? Because you don't see Krishna. You understand? Vishavini vartante nirahara siddehina rasa rajana supiyasa parandrastvana vartate. Vishavini vartante means you Vinivartanta, you practice abstinence from these sense objects. And but why are you practicing abstinence? Niraharasya, because you know it is not good for you. Niraharasya means like regulative principles. You know it is not good, so I am not doing that. But rasa vrajam, you still have so much taste in the heart for that thing. Rasa vrajam means asat trishna, the taste. Trishna means thirst. The thirst for asat is still there. So you are not doing. You're not doing because you see that this is not good for me. But in your heart, you still like it. Isn't it? You can think of something like this. You can think of something like this. That you're not doing, but you know you really like it. Now you can think of something. Few things you can think. One or two at least. But the devotee who is Paranjastva, he is getting higher taste. He is stopping his relationship with this world because of the meaning of his inner life, or to say his inner life is so meaningful because he's got a relationship with Krishna that nothing exterior to that can attract him. You follow? Nothing exterior to his meaningful life can attract him to find meaning in other things. Just like sometimes when we were in illusion, because we're not now, so some time ago when we were in illusion and we might have had like some relationship, some loving relationship with the object of sex desire, then when you first got it, it was like so meaningful. You were in love. And the birds somehow chirped more sweetly. The leaves somehow fell more elegantly. The whole atmosphere was just so beautiful because you were in love. You ever have this experience? Some of you, I suspect some of you have. You don't want to admit in the public, but super souls informing me. Many of us have such experience. You fall in love, then you find so much meaning in that new loving relationship, so-called, that everything else seems meaningless. And then when you break up for the first time and you're like devastated, you know, you don't know if you can live, and the whole world seems meaningless. Yugayitam nimeshena chakshusha parvishayitam shunyayitam, this whole world is zero. Shunya, it is meaningless without my, you know, girlfriend or boyfriend. This thing happens. I seen with my friend when I was 17 and I moved to New York. And when I moved, one of my roommates, he had just broken up with his girlfriend of 7 years. And he literally stayed in the bed for a month, practically. He would only get up to go to the bathroom. And he would eat very little bit in the evening, like a yogi. You know, just a little bit. And then he would go back into the bed. Because he saw the whole world as meaningless because he didn't have this. And this is Maya, of course. But a devotee's situation is also like that. Yugayitam nimeshena. Mahaprabhu was praying like this. Being separated from Krishna, where is the meaning in this world? It is all shunya. So the devotee here, yasya na kanchana artam vanchati, there he is not seeing meaning elsewhere because the meaning of his inner life is so profound that nothing exterior to that can attract him. Therefore, he is called yasya na kanchana. He has no other such desire. There is no other wealth. What other wealth is there? It says, there's one verse, I can't remember it, from the 11th canto, chapter 2, the last 7 or 8 verses of the chapter describes the pure devotees of the Lord. And it is mentioned there that they will not exchange their relationship with Krishna even for half a moment. For the wealth, even if they were awarded in that half a moment, they just give up your relationship for half a moment. And if you do it just for half a moment, you will get the wealth of Lord Brahma. The three worlds will be offered to you. All you have to do is give up your sentiment for Krishna for half a moment. Now, if they were to give us that proposition, we'd say, this is a good deal, just for a half a moment. Then I'll go back to chanting Hare Krishna, and then I'll also have the wealth of the three worlds. This is like a really good deal. I'm become a double winner. But the pure devotee is mentioned, 11th canto, chapter 2. I don't remember the verse number. So last 7 or 8 verses, you can go and see. I could find it if I had 11th canto. But not even for a half a moment, they will give up their relationship with Krishna. Even if they were offered all the wealth for just giving up in that half a moment. So this is the meaning of this second phase. They have no other meaning. There is no other meaning. It's there. So also the devotees here are described as Ananda Samudra Magnaha. So their consciousness is absorbed in Ananda. Ocean. Samudra means ocean. So their consciousness is absorbed in an ocean of bliss that comes from Gayanta, singing the Atiya Bhuta, the extremely wonderful, And Sumangalam, extremely auspicious Tatcharitam activities of Krishna. They're always performing Sankirtan of the Lord. And as a result of their Sankirtan, Ananda Samudra Magnaha, they are always absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy, bliss. They're always happy, blissed out, geeked out. And this is in contrast to the...
Oh, that's a little bit of...
Anyway,
colloquial, you know, jargon.
And as such, being always blissed out, they're not experiencing the suffering of this world, which is actually miserable. This world is actually a place of suffering. Therefore, you ask anyone, how are you? What answer you will give? How are you? What do you mean, how am I? I'm suffering. This material world is actually suffering. And if you give any other answer, you are lying. Today I'm happy. No, you are not happy. Just like if your head is dunked under the water, and then someone pulls your head out, do you say, I am happy? That is not happiness. That is just freedom from suffering for a few moments, and then you get dunked back under. So someone says, I am happy. What happiness is there? This is lying. Either you're lying or you're in a lot of ignorance. Now, ignorance is bliss, right? And a lot of ignorance is there. So there is no happiness. Happiness comes from singing the glories of Krishna. And from experiencing that happiness, then you do not experience the suffering of this world. That contrast is made by Prabhupada in his translation, actually. And when he's kind of like sharing with us some of Gajendra's mood, that the devotees are like this, but I, however, am in danger, and therefore I have to pray to you for some benediction. And he's giving that contrast. It actually doesn't come in the verse, but Prabhupada is sharing the bhava of Gajendra with us. The devotees are like this. He's glorifying the devotee, but I am not like this. The devotees are always, what is the verse Prahlad Maharaj is saying? Naivo dhuije paradarata yabhaitananyas tvabhir yagayana mahamrita magnachitta. Prahlad Maharaj is praying that I do not experience any suffering in this world. What do you mean you don't experience any suffering in this world? What do you mean? Your father, if our father, we didn't like, some of us didn't grow up with our fathers and we're like eternally damaged psychologically. We got to go see a psychiatrist. But Prahlad Maharaj's father did not only not, he was around, but he was so abusive. And not like in an ordinary sense. 1,000 ways tried to kill Prahlad and so on. And Prahlad Maharaj is praying, I am not suffering this much. What do you mean you're not suffering? How are you not? Then he tells the answer. Tvaibhirya ghayana mahamrita magna chitta. Because magna, my magna, same word. My chitta is magna, absorbed. Absorbed in what? Tvaibhirya ghayana mahamrita, absorbed in singing your glories. Again, Sankirtan. Because of the Sankirtan, I'm getting so much joy from Sankirtan. What can be suffering? There are no suffering. Prabhupada writes in his purport today that this is possible for Prahlad Maharaj, the pure devotees. When they do Sankirtan, they experience such an ocean of bliss. There is no question of suffering. When we do Sankirtan, sometimes we get like a little glimmer of some happiness. But then we come to wonder about that later on when we're so depressed. Like, was that happiness real? Or was it just like a mental state, you know? Actually, bhakti is itself ananda. All the angas of bhakti are ananda. Bhakti ananda. Just like if you can take ananda and put it into a form, it will be the form of the angas of bhakti. So ananda is like, here's ananda packed into the shravanam. You know, bottle, shravanam. Here's the ananda packed into the kirtan. Here's the ananda packed into the smaranam. All the angas of bhakti are themselves ananda. So if you have any, that means happiness is in that thing. And therefore, if you have connection with that thing, you experience that happiness. You understand? Just like you think happiness is in money, but so many people have money, they are not happy. That means happiness is not in money. Happiness is simply a mental state. You follow? Or you think you get a girlfriend, then you all be happy. But then after 2-3 weeks, that's like a really good relationship. Then you think, I don't know about this. I don't know about this. That means the happiness is not in her or him, isn't it? Also, if the happiness was in them, that means that same object can give happiness to everyone. Because the happiness is in the object, it's not in their mind. But we find that the same object does not give happiness to everyone. That means that the ananda is not in the object. The ananda, so-called ananda, is in their mind only. But with bhakti, the ananda is in the thing itself that you're doing. Shravanam is ananda, kirtanam is ananda, smaranam is ananda, deity worship is ananda, padasevanam is all the angas of bhakti are ananda. But you do not experience, I do not experience the Ananda. Why is that? Who has answer? Scripture. You can tell from the scripture. Yeah. Okay, Narcissus. Okay. Any other answer? Anyone enlightened? Huh? The jandis. Yes. Stat Krishna Nama Charitadi Satapya Vidya. Putasya Rasa Nashana Rochikanu. Because of the jandis of ignorance, you cannot taste the characteristics of Krishna, which is sweet like sugar candy. The verse says, it's sweet like sugar candy. You cannot taste it, I cannot taste it, because of the jandis of ignorance. So therefore, Prabhupada is saying here, only those who are pure devotees, they've given up such jandis state, then this thing happens to them. Ananda Samudra Magna. Consciousness is absorbed in Ananda when they sing the glories of Krishna. And they've experienced no suffering in this world. This is pure devotion to Krishna. Such glorification of devotees, again, gives us information about Krishna. Wow, this Krishna must be something extraordinary. That simply by singing about him, they become like this? Just like if we sing each other's glories, actually we do sing each other's glories oftentimes in the form of criticism, but no happiness comes from that. Isn't it? He is like this, she is like that, and on and on, the list is going on and on and on and on. And list complaining, do you become Ananda is coming up? You don't feel any Ananda. And so much, and you may talk the glories of some superstar, but no Ananda is coming. But Krishna, when you speak his glories, Ananda is coming? So that makes you wonder, what is this Krishna? How is Ananda coming just by speaking about him? We'll just speak of seeing him and interacting with him. Just by singing about him, Ananda is coming? So this gives us some information about Krishna. Then the second verse, someone may say, no, this Krishna is impersonal. He is, what is this Krishna? He's just some human being. Avajananti mamuda manusham tanamashritam param bhava majananto mamabhutamayashram. Bhagavad Gita is saying this thing, that fools deride Krishna. Why do they deride him? Because he looks like human. His pastimes are deceptively human. Queen Kunti is saying that also. Bhagavad Chakrishita. How's that verse start? I forgot. Anyway, his pastimes are vidambanam. Vidambanam means bewildering. Why are they bewildering? Because they're deceptively human. Very deceptively human. Of course, they're not that deceptively human. Like he was dancing with the gopis, but like a billion of them. That's not exactly human. But anyway, people read Krishna's pastimes and they get what they want according to their consciousness. So his pastimes are deceptively human. So someone may say, well, who is this Krishna? Who is this God? He is just some ordinary being. So then in the second verse, that's not on the board, it talks about what is Krishna's position. He is Aksharam. Aksharam is a synonym for Brahman. He is unchanging, imperishable. Brahma, Param Paresham. He is transcendental. Param means beyond the modes. So he's not just like a composite of the material energy, which is what the Maya bodies say. He's a composite of the mode of goodness for helping your consciousness concentrate on something. No, he is Param. He is transcendental to the modes. Pare Isham. He is the Isha, master of others. And Prabhupada says, including Lord Brahma. So it's not like he's a great person like Lord Brahma. He is the master of such people. Pare Isham. Avyaktam. He is unmanifest to the material senses. Mayam tatami dham sarvam jagad avyakta murtina. Krishna's form is all pervading. Try to understand that. That's very impossible to understand. Krishna's got, like, how big is Krishna? Like, you know. Okay, when he's a child, he's like, what, this big maybe? And this form is all pervading. How to understand that? You would not be able to understand. That's impossible. That is impossible. It's not even something you have to think about. Like, how do I understand? You ain't understanding that. Because we are finite. Krishna is infinite. And not only is Krishna infinite, it's not that he's infinite because his energy is spread everywhere. That's one explanation. But his actual form is infinite. Yeah, this little form that Mother Jasoda was in, that form is infinite. And what was the proof when Jasoda Mai looked in Krishna's mouth? What did she see? She saw all of existence. So that's, and then she also saw herself in Krishna's mouth. She was like looking, is that me? Looking inside your mouth, you know, that is very bewildering. You would not understand that. So Krishna's form is itself infinite, but even though he's everywhere, you do not see, none of us are seeing, because he's avyaktam. He's avyaktam murtina in the Bhagavad Gita verse. His form is unmanifest to the senses. And therefore, adhyatmika yoga gamyam. He can only be captured by bhakti. Only if you love Krishna, you can see. Just like, how can you see the sun? How is it possible to see the sun? What is the answer? below. Now you can see the sun. Yes. And a little explanation more. Yeah, that's correct. No, incorrect. Huh? Okay, that's an almost similar answer. How do you see the sun? By the mercy of the sun. You can say it like that, by the mercy of the sun. You see by the sun's energy, the sunshine. Isn't it? It is the sunshine that gives illumination to the eye. The eye cannot see anything. It needs the help of light to see. So by the illumination of the sunshine, which is the energy of the sun, you can see the sun. So Bhakti Yoga is the internal energy of Krishna. Bhakti Yoga is the internal energy. So by the assistance of that energy of God, Bhakti, then you can come to see Krishna. Otherwise, he is avyakta. You will not see anything. You simply speculate, oh, I'm feeling Krishna. I feel, no, you're not feeling anything. If you don't have bhakti for Krishna, and that too should be a profound level of devotion. It means devotion has to grow more and more. Then you can see. Atindriyam, he's beyond the material senses. Sukshman, because he's very subtle. Just like you cannot see space. Space is all around us, but it's a subtle element. You cannot see it. It cannot be tainted. It cannot be changed. So Krishna is more sukshman. He's more sukshman than that. Actually, consciousness is more subtle than this also. And Krishna is more subtle than consciousness. He's interior to even consciousness. How you will see. So this Krishna's position is very bewildering. Atiduram. He's very far away. But actually, I think in the translation, Eva Atiduram, this is important. Eva Atiduram. Atiduram means extremely far away. Eva means like. He's like he's extremely far away. But how can he be far away if he's all pervading? What is the answer? If Krishna is far away, but he is all pervading, how is he far away? But the word is saying he's like he's far away. So it means he's not exactly far away, but it's like he's far away. What is the understanding? He's aloof. Okay. Any other answer? Yes. Everyone, let's give a round of applause. Yes. Consciousness. Krishna is far, not in distance, but in consciousness when you're a conditioned soul. The distance is not created by proximity, but it's created by consciousness. Just like sometimes, even in your relationships with people, there's distance because of consciousness, but you might be sitting right next to them, but you don't like them because there's some blockage there. So Eva, it is like he's far away because consciousness is so absorbed in the temporary. Anantam, he's infinite. Adyam, he's the source of everything. Paripurnam, he's complete. He's absolute and complete, completely full. Paripurnam, completely complete, fully complete. Ujay, I offer my obeisances to such God. So he's not an ordinary person. That's what is being said here. He's extraordinary. He's not just some human being or something like that. So this is this particular verse. Prabhupada says in the purport that sometimes devotees, and when they're in heavy conditions, they may pray to the Supreme Lord for something that is not exactly purely devotional. But they regret such prayer. So that's kind of an instruction for us, because in our conditioned state, we do desire many things that are not purely devotional. But even if you desire such things, the desire you should regret simultaneously, so that that desire doesn't become more and more powerful and eclipse our pursuit for Krishna consciousness. Okay, that's my class. I went really long today. I don't like to do that normally. Are there any questions or comments or any further points of consideration? Okay.
You're mentioning that this process of bhakti yoga, it's transcendental, so it automatically will include jnana and vairagya. So no need to, you know, come to bhakti through jnana and vairagya when you can just start with bhakti yoga.
Okay.
The question is that in our bhakti yoga process, the first process is hearing, which very much includes jnana. And for instance, just to give an example to clarify my question, You said gave some nice knowledge that Maya is seeing meaning in something that's separate from Krishna. And just hearing that, I mean, that really like penetrates the heart, and then hearing that philosophy, it actually increases bhakti. While at the same time, I can see that if you say that to someone who has no devotional, who's not performing devotional service, it won't enter their heart. So it's interesting, like, and to add the dimension where the question comes, is that if we just did devotional service, so to speak, like maybe some kind of sahaja, I guess, where you're just like religion without philosophy is sentimentalism. Like if we're just sentimentally doing it without the proper hearing process, somehow we wouldn't really get it. And so the doubt comes in that this process includes something that it's actually transcendental to. So why?
Yeah, the meaning is that it is jnana, bhakti is also jnana. So Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also refers to bhakti as a type of jnana. He calls it on 7.2 and 9.1. Huh? He said that this bhakti yoga is jnana vijnana. And by understanding this jnana vijnana, nothing else will be needed to be known. That's 7.2. And by understanding this jnana vijnana, you will be free from all inauspiciousness. That's 9.1. So Krishna in 9.7.2 and 9.1 refers to bhakti as jnana vijnana. So what type of jnana vijnana then? There's different types of jnana vijnana. You understand? So in this verse also Prabhupada is quoting Anya Abhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadhyaya Navritam. So here it says that this pure bhakti, Uttama Bhakti, Anya Abhilashita Shunyam. So it is Shunyam. There is zero other desires in it. And jnana karmadi anavritam, and it is not covered by gan and karma and adi, other things such as vairagya, tapasya, etc. So our acharyas make an interesting point. In the first phrase it says shunyam, and the second phrase it says anavritam, not covered. So why are they using another phrase in the second line? Why don't they say also there is no gan, there is no karma in it? It just says it is not covered. Instead of saying that it is zero, it is saying that it is not covered by jnana and karma and other things. The meaning is that it is not covered by the wrong types of jnana, the wrong types of karma, the wrong types of vairagya, the wrong types of tapasya, etc. So the bhakti has jnana in it, as you've described. Hearing is itself the process of getting jnana. What type of jnana? Sambandha jnana. The jnana that is intrinsic to bhakti, intrinsic to the Lord. Just like when Vyasadeva in the first canto goes into meditation on Samadhi, then what does he see? He sees the principles of Sambandha again, Avideya again, and Prayojan again. He actually sees it. It's not that it was just like conceptualized in his mind. Like he thought about it and like, these are some really cool ideas. And then he wrote them down. And then that was the Bhagavatam. He actually saw Sambandha again with his eyes. You know, he saw Krishna and the internal energy. He saw Maya kept away by the internal energy. He saw the jiva bewildered by Maya. He saw how by bhakti yoga they can get out of Maya, and how by that they can get prema. He saw all the principles of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan with his, in his samadhi. And then he wrote it down. And then when we read that, we get Sambandha again, Abhideya again, Prayojan again. So again is there. But what type of gan is there? Gan means just devotional gan. So when the contrast is coming to scriptures, when they said no gan, there's no gan, or it means the impersonal type of gan. The gan that leads to Brahman realization or Atma realization without Krishna. So this gan, it don't have that type of gan in it, or it includes that type of gan in it without having to independently cultivate that. Okay, first let me realize I'm a spirit soul, and then only after that I'll take bhakti. No, you hear this Sambandha again, and you understand more than your spirit soul. You understand the swarup of the spirit soul as a servant of Krishna, Krishna and Nitya Das, and you'll move from there. No need to go separately. So bhakti has gyan, but this type of gyan. Bhakti has vairagya, but what type of vairagya it has? Oh, this has nothing to do with Krishna's pleasure? Then no, thank you. That vairagya it is having. Like this. What tapasya is having? Oh, this can get me Krishna. This can please Krishna. That tapasya will be there. But not the other type of tapasya, like Gandhi doing some tapasya for a political end. That tapasya will be absent. Like this meaning is like this. Anything else? Yeah.
Sometimes we hear that as one progresses in devotion, he kind of sees himself as not progressing in devotion. And I'm kind of wondering, is this an aspect of devotion itself, or is it something that's covering the devotee to help him?
Like, seeing oneself as not advanced.
Yeah, is this just like intrinsic to bhakti, or is it something that's like...
It is definitely intrinsic to bhakti. So sometimes you see all these great souls giving like these really, really, really humble prayers. And you're like, oh my God, they're so not like that. That's because humility of that type is intrinsic to bhakti. It is called as a sanchari bhav. It's a type of transitory emotion that flavors their devotion to Krishna. So if you look in the Bhagavatam, there's so many prayers like that. They speak of themselves as very lowly, but you're like, they're so exalted. Sometimes their prayers are so low, you're like, man, I'm better than this. And you think like this. You get an idea like that. So this bhakti, this type of humility is inherent to bhakti. And it's also a part of cultivating devotion. It's an element of Sharanagati we were hearing over the weekend. Sharanagati, one of the angas is Karpanye. I mean, the Lord is very great, I am very lowly and wretched. Danya is also called Danya, means like wretchedness. So it is a part, because the main thing, one of the main elements that keeps us in the material world is ego. Ego means what? I am great. That is the basic principle of ego. I am great, and then you just appropriate everything in this world in service of your ego. So you get knowledge. Why are you getting knowledge from the Bhagavatam? To serve my ego, of course. He is my master. Why are you getting music skills? To serve ego. Why are you getting acting skills? To serve my ego. Why are you getting science? Everything is appropriated for service of the ego. And basic idea of the ego is that I am great. Then why are you in Gan? I am God. Huh? Because who can be greater than that? So you come around and say, I am God. The final illusion is coming up. I am the Supreme Lord. Big ego. What Supreme Lord you are? Just like I often tell the story when I was at DePaul University and I met this kid. I always, when I would distribute books, I would open up with asking, who are you? Because I wanted my conversations to be philosophical. I wanted to like really impact people philosophically. So one guy said, I said, this is on yoga and self-realization. And I asked him, who are you? And he said, I'm God. And I was like, really? So, okay, if you are God, then you already know what I want. So I not go through my spiel. I'll just get straight to the punchline. Can I get a donation? And then God, you already know what I'm coming for. So can I get a donation? Then he said, I don't have any money. Student, you know? And I said, what type of God are you, broke God? The God that I worship is the husband of the goddess of fortune. You don't have any money. You know, what type of God? Get out. I'm not saying you should treat like this anyone. It was playful because he also was laughing. So what type of God? That's the ego thing. You hear some spiritual knowledge and you come to the conclusion, I am God. What type of ego? So in order to counteract that ego, you need karpanya. You have to get a realization, I'm wretched. I'm low. Otherwise, how you will hear also? Even to hear scripture, you have to feel yourself less than a speaker and less than the Bhagavatam. And less than the sadhu. Oh, how you will hear? Unless you appreciate how ignorant you are, you will not hear anything. Just like when sometimes you hear and you think, I know so much, then you will not hear anything. You just argue in your mind with the speaker and with the Bhagavatam. I already know this. I already know that. I don't know if that's true. But when you know you're ignorant, you hear very nicely. Just like when you go to a chemistry class for the first time, you don't know chemistry, you know you're ignorant. You don't know the subject. Then everything the speaker is, you already know to really trying to learn because you know you're ignorant. So the appreciation of our wretchedness, our ignorance is required for receiving anything really, knowledge and ultimately devotion. So it is inherent to devotion and is also an aspect of cultivating bhakti. But it can get to the point where if you're like got low self-esteem and you're like always in ignorance, I'm just low and stupid. Monster, and that could be like really that's just mode of ignorance. And again, even with that, the center is yourself. It's all about me, 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 me. I am this, and I am this. Another form of ego. Sometimes ego has a positive aspect, positive meaning that I'm great. Let's see, anyone in here as good as me? Nope. That's like, and then the other side of ego where you're like, I'm worse than everyone, but it's still about you, you're still like the center. The idea of Karpanya is that there's an appreciation of the glory of someone else, and in relationship to them, when am I? I'm so lowly, I have to be the object of their mercy. I'm so low in comparison to them, and in comparison to that reality, that truth, which includes Krishna and his devotees, etc., then what am I? That sort of wretchedness, not the ego sense where it's all about you. So that is important. Okay, last thing, because it's 8:32. Yeah.
You said the final test is thinking that you're a god. And though we're practicing devotional service, like you said, we still have a taste for material things. Though, if the final test is that someone thinks that they're God, that would mean, does that happen before coming to devotional service, or is it somehow in the process of bhakti yoga, someone somehow faced with
thinking bhakti, that they're God? And it happens in bhakti yoga, but this is how it comes out. Because there are different forms of God, right? So one form of God is a Shaktivesh avatar. Shaktivesh avatar means a jiva who is empowered with some particular Shakti of God, and therefore they can do extraordinary things. Like Srila Prabhupada is a Shaktivesh avatar, for example. Prithu, many are there in the Bhagavatam also. So in bhakti it happens like that, where you start to think, I'm a Shaktivesh avatar. Because you're having some influence, you know, you preach to like two people really effectively, and they like started to come around a little bit, and then you change up and you think, I'm a Shaktivesh, you know, Shaktivesh. Some Shakti is coming to me. Like that, it happens actually. I heard this from Chandramali Maharaj. I thought it was a really good insight. Yeah, you start to think, I'm very powerful. I have power over others. I'm a Shaktivesh avatar. And you may not, if someone asks you, you're not going to tell them that, obviously, that I'm a Shaktivesh. But basically, your ego will be shaped like that. That, look at you. You got some power, boy, don't you? Like the mind will be telling, ego will be telling. So it can happen in devotion also. Therefore, usually some guru is there, someone is superior to you has to be there. But superior means you really feel them to be superior. That they're superior in devotion, they're superior in knowledge, they're superior in culture and experience and age, maybe probably also. In every way they are superior to you, and you acknowledge that also. Then when you're in that condition, then you can be kept at bay. Otherwise, you're around everyone, you think, this thing again, let me see. No one's as good as me. Then nothing will be there to check the ego. It's not like you can just say, go to Krishna with folded palms and think you're not being egotistic. It's not that easy. So, of course, there are always two ways of getting humble. I like to say this thing a lot. You can be humble or you can be humbled. And if we don't like the former one of becoming humble, then Krishna's got his own ways of making us humbled by life and so on. So that thing will come out of us. Because you cannot do bhakti at the same time be egotistic. That's not possible. All right, thank you very much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.